Shaolin is the DJ that we call conductor because Shaolin Fantastic is a bad mother. This is Black Hollywood Live. We're doing the final show of the Get Down. Stay tuned. It's Set Me Free by Mylene, obviously, because she's Mylene amazing.
And the Soul Madonna.
Oh, you're right, you're right. They have a full name. Yeah. Is that album cover not everything? Right. They look so amazing, just glowing above the clouds. I really liked it. We're so glad you're here with us for the mid-season finale, I guess we're going to call it. Yeah. This is episode 6 of The Get Down. Raise your words, not your voice. I'm Joelle Monique. You can find me everywhere on the internet at Joelle Monique, and this is my amazing panel.
Hey guys, my name is Sheldon White. You can find me on all social media at SheldonWhite2.
And I'm Kelly Boyd, and you can find me on Twitter as ChaosJ all day, KAOSJ.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, for coming back here to be with us to talk about this amazing, amazing episode. We over to Elizabeth. Yes.
This is great.
We want to jump right in because we have so much to cover. This was a jam-packed, like, nearly hour of a final mid-season finale. I need to stop saying final. There are more episodes to come. So we're going to start with, at the very beginning, the discovery of Napoleon. The guys have found him, and they decide they're going to do an Apache line. Let me go back. Shaolin decides he wants to do an Apache line on this kid, which apparently where you play a song very loud, and you beat him until the song is over.
Now, real quick. I was watching that, and then when they go and they zoom in on Napoleon's eye as he hears that song, and then he starts having all these flashbacks, that was so Quentin Tarantino-esque to me.
And so he gets all of his stuff from the 70s, so I was looking more at, like, what immediately came to mind was Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, the tunnel scene, where you're all kind of, but in a lot of murder mysteries and things from the 70s, they do that trick where they're they're layering over images and doing these crazy kind of flashbacks and the swirly colors, which I thought was a really nice homage to the era.
I'm so glad that Boo Boo did not hit him. Like, I just did not want, he was like, do it, hit him. And Boo Boo was like, okay, I'm going to do it. And he was like, I don't think I can do it. And I was
just, losing
innocence.
Yeah, no.
He's our baby. He's the Michael Jackson of this group. The young, innocent, talented one. that whole scene was really crazy. Shao was ready to go and beat him. And I thought it was kind of, I was like, take a step back, Shao. Like, you could clearly learn something from this kid. Like, he's breaking and cracking under pressure. And then we learn, a couple of things. First, I want to say that before we kind of get into everything, Shaolin calls Wolf his man. And then the minute he learns Wolf turned on Annie, he's like, that mother.
Shut your mouth.
Were you guys surprised at how Fat? Because I guess I didn't think he was that loyal to Fat Annie. I thought he would be closer to Wolf, who kind of shows him some respect along the way, the little we've seen them interact. I was kind of shocked.
I think that Annie would find out, and Annie would go after Wolf. And I think it's, in Shao's eyes, probably easier to align with Annie than it is to align with Wolf.
Plus, he's already aligned with Annie in multiple ways. So
He had a
different allegiance to her than, you know.
So I was having that contemplation, too. Like, it's clearly there's some Oedipus complex things going on, this mother-son dynamic to their relationship, and then you've got the sexual aspects of their relationship. Does Shao love Annie?
That's deep. A good one.
Yeah, I'm wondering.
Love, like, yeah, girl, not
at
all.
I don't get that sense
Not
at all.
At all. More like
maternal? Like,
maybe. To a certain extent, there might be a little bit there. I feel like Annie is still, even though she's like, I'm old and soft now. Well, not so much. She's still kind of low-key hardcore and rough around the edges.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I would say yes, he does have love for her. And if anything is a little bit more maternal, as weird and as incestuous as that sounds, because they have sex with each other. But, yeah, I definitely think there's something there.
But does he have a maternal figure? I guess we don't really know.
No, he doesn't. We talk about that.
So that's
like,
probably the closest thing he's ever had, even though it's all weird.
I think that whole outfit is low-key like, you know, and then now the Get Down, that's family.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That's, you know, that's his own makeshift family, so.
Yeah, I'm interested, too, in the flip of that. Is Annie in love with Shao, or is she just grooming him to be? Because you see so much, like, to me, it just felt so predatory when she was like, and you know, I have so much love for you.
Mm-hmm.
But now you're the man I always need to be. What else? We took you in like you were blood and now you are. Comes a little bit later.
You win it all the way, sugar.
Yeah. So, like, I don't know. It's weird. I don't know if you guys have watched Boardwalk Empire at all when it was on. There's a similar relationship between actual mother and son in it. It's very confusing and disturbing. Mm. So let's just continue on this storyline. So they just, after learning, Napoleon spills the beans and is like, I know that Wolf set them up. He didn't know Wolf's name, but he got there. And so Chow takes him to Annie's, turns him over, and then Annie sets up, which is like a classic poker cowboy kind of moment, which I really liked that they made it at kind of a 70s gangster moment of like the gun under the table playing awesome. Cards and like, play him his favorite song. Just go ahead, do it. Play his favorite song. And so he gets this chance to rant and rave about how much he loves this song. And she points out all of his characteristics. Smoking well, you drive the red car, you smoke the Cuban. And Jin just pops him in the knee. And I was like, damn, Annie. But then she makes Chow kill him. She puts it on Chow. Now, Chow kind of pulls the... Where do you guys fall on that? Did Chow kill him or did Annie pull Chow's finger?
Ooh.
I think it's... Yeah, I think if he had the gun and Annie wasn't behind him over his shoulder with her hand around his hand, I don't think he would have shot him.
Okay.
I don't think he would have shot well...
I mean, especially with Wolf down there.
Yeah, I don't think he would have shot him. But, I mean, there was some angst there. But, yeah, I don't think he would have pulled the trigger. That's just me.
I don't either. I got to agree with you on that one. I mean, she... Once again, I think he had to align with her. In that particular moment... What was he going to do? Say no? And then, like, then what would happen, you know, to all of them? Wolf would have died anyway.
And I'll piggyback off what you said. Every time we see Chow be hard, like he's got a great exterior. He knows how to walk into a room and make kind of people that won't challenge him fear him. But the minute he gets challenged or kind of pushed back up against the wall, he's like, I don't want this. Like, I got to get out of here. His fight or flight instinct kicks in and it's flight almost always. So I don't think he would have killed him either. Especially with him being there, like, she already took your manhood. Don't let him take your soul. I was like,
heart, dude. You cut me deep.
Right?
You cut me deep, Wolf.
Yes. So now Wolf is dead, and we'll just kind of wrap up this story as we move into the next segment, which I call Power, where we're looking at all of our characters, talking about which kind of angles of power they can get. And Annie's pulled Chow aside, and she tells him, like, you know, like I said earlier, we took you in like blood, and now you are blood. And she makes him take over some of Wolf's responsibilities. She wants him to go to 123rd, run the deal, make sure that they get the drugs. And he's like, well, I can't miss the get down. We've got this battle. So I'll just sell drugs there. It'll work. And Annie kind of gives him some leeway, which is the first time we've seen her kind of respect Chow. I was
super surprised by that.
But I think that's one of those where... Because she got irritated. Let's not forget. She did get irritated.
She did cock that head a little bit.
Like, you a man now.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that... He said, look, I've got this to do, and it's me. And she does know that it means something to him, regardless of how she personally feels about it. Mm-hmm. But, the fact that he came up with a compromise, like, look, I'm going to move. I'll sell at my party. And not only am I going to sell at my party, girl, I'm going to move so much weight, it's going to make your head spin. And granted, he didn't say that verbatim, but that's pretty much what he was saying.
It was close.
Pretty much. It sounded good, right? Okay. So then when he gave her that compromise, not only was it a compromise, but I kind of felt like it's going above and beyond because now you're not just going, you're taking it to a whole nother level because now you're moving and you're getting me a whole different group of kids.
You've created a new industry for us, essentially.
Pretty much.
And now as these concerts are taking off and briefly skip to the end, we know Cadillac is watching this and seeing kind of how the flow of product is going. And we know that they sell Bugo dollars.
Messing up them good disco records.
God damn it, Cadillac. I really don't like him. So we'll see what happens. In that moment, I was definitely thinking, like, you better sell because if you come back. Because he even said, what he did say was, also more than anybody on 123rd, I think maybe he said combined. Which, to me, is like, you better bring all the dough. You need so much.
I think, it was another way, it was also her test to him. Like, I'm going to let you try this. Show me what you got. And if he doesn't deliver, then I think she's going to crack hard on him. And he won't be able to do this other stuff. She'd be like, you can't do it. You already proved that to me, you know?
Yeah, so, good for him, bad for him. I'm really upset that Chow's kind of making this deal with the devil and falling further in Annie's trap. Because she's got him now. You killed someone. she can hang that over your head for the rest of your life. But let's skip over to Jackie.
Let's talk about it.
Okay. Oh, Jackie. So, as promised from last episode, Jackie decides to take Mylene and the girls to go see Leslie Gold, who has geniusly come up with this idea. Instead of having DJs going through and listening to bad album after bad album trying to find gold, she's like, look, I'm going to just bring the creme. I'm going to do all the listening. I'll bring you the best one. You choose what you want. And it's easy. It's a good setup for everybody. So she got in with record labels, with producers, with the DJ spinning.
She's like the Ebert. She's like the Ebert of
music at the time.
Of music, yeah,
for sure.
Much.
She's stacked herself up nicely. So Jackie's got to come and, you know, put the album in the pool. Unfortunately, Leslie wasn't always Leslie Gold. Her last name used to be Schwartz, and she once gave Jackie a blowjob in the back of a limo, and she was his assistant. She was raped by Jackie. Big mess. So when Jackie comes in needing help from her, you're going to call a timeout on that?
I'm going to call a timeout.
You're going to fight that.
Okay. Because, see, I'm fighting this whole him raping her thing.
When you're in a position of power, look, here's how I read it. You were in a position of power.
Okay.
And I felt at the time, and based off Jackie's wild drug tendencies that we've seen and the way we've seen him treat people before he gets to Mylene and kind of starts to have this conversion, I strongly believe that it was either A, encouraged, or B, forced upon her, like, in order to keep your job, in order to stay in good standing.
And that's what I was going to say, is that I don't think that it was just like, give me that, you know, give me your cookies. I don't think he took the cookies. I think it was just more like, if you want to get ahead, this is what you need to do.
That's exactly what she did to him. Like, rape doesn't have to be violent to be intimidating and to be terrifying.
And unwanted.
Yeah, so that's where I think she's coming from. And that's definitely and she takes that whole scenario and just flips it right back on Jackie. She's like, I'm going to use my power like you use your power. I'm going to abuse, like, this privilege like you did.
And if you're compliant, then we'll see your record.
And she says this right after she tells him, there's no way I'm ever going to help you. So I understand his positioning. He's got it in with Cruz. You know, he's promised Mylene this girl that he clearly cares about, and he cares about her career, that he was going to do whatever it took. So he subjugates himself in order to get what he needs.
Is that what we're calling it?
It was rape. Yeah, I put it a rape. But to some point,
man.
Right, yeah.
He put in the work, though. She should have played the record just off of the work that he put in. Like,
oh my God, no.
Wow.
Oh, man.
He took it to a whole other level.
This was the hardest scene to watch. This
was
hard
to watch.
Like, especially the whole, like, insertion of the fingers with the long nails. And then the choking sounds, and then she's, like, dragging him, like, by, like, all of that was really violent.
It was also interesting, because I don't know how many times in television we see it happening that way. I feel like we see it vice versa, where a man does this to a girl all the time.
Always.
So, and I wonder if that was part of the reason it was a little hard to watch, is because we just,
I think
it would
have been hard to watch
different.
Whoever was in the role. Like, if the roles had been completely
so.
Reversed,
and
totally been different.
I agree. I just think it's interesting to think about
Absolutely. Maybe I'm sick, because I thought it was a good scene, and I
it was an excellent scene.
The reversal of power. I just was sad that at the end she still was like, yeah, and I'm still not gonna play your record, but thanks, you did a good job.
Look, I totally understand her reasoning. Like, I don't think, I think an eye for an eye makes the whole world blind. I don't think that that's a good way to get justice.
I
also know that there is probably was not a good avenue for her to get justice any other way. Like, in her mind, this was probably the best she was ever going to get. And she got to humiliate the guy who humiliated her at the start of her career and didn't believe in her and told her that. Because he was like, you weren't a very good secretary. Like, you didn't do your job. She was like, I was young and look at what I turned myself into.
Right.
You never gave me a chance.
I mean, he said you were terrible and you stole from me. See, now something else. It's like, okay, I get that you're mad and I get that things went south. Come on, like, you stole my drugs? Like, that is, like, a huge violation of code. Like, you don't steal someone's drugs.
But as she said, I was mad. And Jackie is no, like, Jackie has done
Jackie's no angel
and hurt her. So, like, look, these are, it's a messed up situation. Like, it is hard to call anyone bad guy in the scene, which I think is what makes the scene good. Mm-hmm. Is like, it's not just nobody's getting really anything out of it, but you understand where everyone emotionally is coming from and why these decisions have been made. So it felt honest and it felt real and it was, woo, and it was terrible. So as they're leaving this situation, and as you say that she says, I'm not going to play your record, it's dead to everyone, Jackie decides to test this theory, goes back to his hotel and starts calling up everyone he knows. Makes a big list, and they're like, no, No, I like when he does the British accent to try to get through somebody.
Hey, Jackie like, told me. I was like, yo, the record's dope, bro, but I can't play it. I mean, I even had to tell him no. Yeah, he called everybody.
So Jackie's SOL. And so let's cut that there. We'll jump back into Jackie's story in a minute. But I want to talk about Zeke at Mr. Gunn's. So Zeke went to Mr. Gunn. He got to get back the internship. He's like, I'm not going to kiss your ass, but I will work hard. I've done everything I need to do to get here. And you're going to respect me. I'm going to do a good job for you. So Mr. Gunn's like, okay, come to my house. Let's talk. Let's figure this thing out. He sends his daughter, Claudia. And I instantly like Claudia. I instantly am like, this girl. Look, I don't know if you guys have ever read the Eloise book series.
No.
Probably. Okay, it's four little girls. And Eloise is like a little girl without a very wealthy mother in New York. And so she always goes to, like, nice parties and stuff, but she's Eloise and she doesn't quite fit in. Her outfit is the exact same outfit Eloise wears. Add a choker to it. So I was like, I see what we're doing here. Rich girl who just wants to have fun. She's a little silly. What did you guys think of Claudia?
Okay, can I?
Yeah,
you okay. Got it. I thought, I was kind of like, is Claudia kind of flirting with?
I was wondering the same thing. They had the eye contact.
Right? Like the teenage angst. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, I bet you got some teenage angst, girl.
Oh, no, she definitely does. She was like, do you like punk? I don't know what that is. You don't know the Ramones? And I was like, okay, this girl is going to, A, get you in danger. Like, she's going to get you in trouble. But she's also going to open your mind and show you a lot of a world you have nothing about. Like, you should keep Claudia close. Not so close that she competes with Mylene, but, you know, close. Hang out
not
with her.
Not close enough for her to take her clothes off, either.
Keep your clothes off, Claudia. Well, not only that, but you do not want to sleep with Mr. Gunn's daughter.
No, you don't. You don't.
I don't
that
think that's
going to
end
be good territory.
Well for you. Because it clearly seems that he has a good relationship with her. Like, they're joking around the table. Mm-hmm. Like, her mom jokes about being sedated, which I don't doubt that she might be, like, a 70s pill-popping mom. But she's there, and in her life, they're having sit-down dinners together. So, don't F with Claudia, but hang. And then Mr. Gunn starts testing Zeke. Like, you know, would you leave your friends? Could you do that? Could you take that road? Could you do what it takes? You know, could you leave the Bronx to come back and make it better? But he also has some lines in there of, like, you could escape filth and squalor and a bunch of other stuff to make, and, like, you know, losing friends. The friends we, like,
he said,
remove.
I got you. Rebound.
Thank you.
Right here. Friendships we break more than the friendships we make.
This. So, first of all, why are you judging his friends? You haven't even met his friends.
Right? You don't
He's
know
not in
friends?
A gang. He's not wearing colors. He's never been locked up. Like, his friends are his family. So, to instantly want to remove him from that sends warning signals in my head. I'm like, don't let them do this to you. You will not survive out there alone. If you're a POC who has entered a white-dominated corporation, you need your friends. Don't do it alone. It's not safe or healthy. So, that definitely put up some red flags. But Mr. Gunn does seem to think he has it, like that he has something mm-hmm. to go for. What do you guys think Mr. Gunn sees in Zeke?
I mean, throughout the series, you do see Zeke's leadership, usually with the group, but he must see some of that in there, within Zeke, and how he's like willing to stand up and make sure he gets the opportunity to meet him. I mean, that was a perfect example of seeing that this kid can be a leader and has so much potential, you know?
Yeah.
Definitely. I feel like he likes that determination, because Zeke's very determined. Once he, you know, sets his eye on something, he's going after it. Again, with that internship, when he stopped him in the hallway, I mean, that was real bold. Mm-hmm. That was real ballsy. So I feel like he sees that, and that reminds him of himself when he was younger. And even now, to this day, I mean, he was hungry. He's, you know, he said, oh, you know, I've got, what, four Bachsteins or whatever, you know, whatever the fancy piano was.
Oh, yeah.
And then he was talking to, oh, you worked hard and put yourself up by the bootstraps. No. I did this, and this.
Let's
and
talk
I took
about what he did.
And I shut down some
before
stuff.
Before lunch, he raised the price of Subway tokens.
Yeah.
He made sure teachers couldn't get a raise.
Yeah.
And he closed a hospital near Zeke. Now,
He's vicious.
It boiled my blood, and I was like, stand up and walk out, which is completely the opposite message of this episode, which is raise your words, not your voices. But, whoa, sir, that just, like, Disney villain.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
low-key.
Unapologetically, like, yeah. Yes, okay. I make some evil-ass decisions, but I have five of these pianos.
But it's good
which
for
you
me.
Need for, well, you can't play all five at once. Mr. Gunn is everything I hate in the world. He makes me so angry.
Yeah, Mr. Gunn is a G, though.
He's straight gangsta. I can't lie. All day. Like he clearly all day. Doesn't care. I definitely get some Dick Cheney vibes off of him. Pulling the strings behind the scenes, you know, evil laugh now, and everything.
What do you think about the roach?
Now, see, okay, we're just getting there. Okay, so as we're sitting, this roach starts to climb out of Zeke's clothing. And instantly, you know that for him, this is right as Mr. Gunn's going into his squalor and filth, mm-hmm. and he can escape all that kind of jargon. And so Zeke is seeing this roach and thinking of himself and where he comes from, I think. But to me, it was like a warning symbol of, like, this guy is filth. This guy is the cockroach. You need to get away from him. How did you guys take it?
I honestly was kind of confused by it. I was like, I don't quite understand. I mean, both those things do make sense, though, you know?
Mm-hmm. I lost my train of thought. But I felt like with the roach thing, I don't want to say that the roach was his friend. Because that's not the case, although I remember a time when I lived with my family and we had roaches and we gave them names because they were just always there. So they were like friends. But when he finally says, I'll do it, and he smashes the roach, one, obviously he's smashing it because he doesn't want him to see it because
sure.
he's the one that brought it in the house. Mm-hmm. But I felt like the whole meat of that conversation was saying, look, like, don't put everything into your friends and your friendships. You know, like, you need to be able to step away from that in order to better yourself. And then maybe you can go back, or maybe you don't. And I felt like by him squashing that bug and saying, like, boom, I can do it, he was saying, like, I'm willing to make that sacrifice if I need to get to where I need to be.
Which is so funny, because the very next thing he says is, like, can you come on Saturday? He's like, oh, that music thing. And we get these proclamations from both Zeke and Shaolin of, like, no, I can leave the other things behind. Like, I'm 100% for this. But also this music thing, though. I'm not letting that go, of course. Right. I'm going to do both. They both say at the end of their scenes, I can do both. I can make both happen.
Mm-hmm.
So I agree with you. It definitely felt like him in that moment being like, yeah, I can't get out of the Bronx. Like, this dirty place, this, you know, where my friends, where I'm not sure what they're going to mm-hmm. be doing in a couple of years. Like, I can leave that all behind. But his words definitely are the opposite of
so
that.
So you're saying, in theory, he'd like to be able to do this. He thinks he can do this, but we don't know if he's going to be able to execute it or not.
I think he thinks he can do it
mm-hmm.
in his conscious brain, but in his subconscious is like, well, we're not letting go of that stuff. Right, we still have music to do. So both Shao and Zeke are going to try to fulfill both obligations to the devils they've made deals with. And so now we can go on to Free People Being Free. Which is my favorite.
So fun.
Dan Hardy was everything.
Oh, that was awesome.
I lived in Boys Town, Chicago for a long time. So I was like, home, what? This is amazing. So Dizzy and Thor are spray painting in the tunnels. And Thor's asking Dizzy, like, well, what are you going to do? Now, he's like, I don't know. I don't really think about it. He's like, well, you have this great art. You should probably let people see it. And he's like, yeah, okay. So he invites him to this club. It's a secret club. He's got a difficult time getting in at first, but then Kusa sees him and is like, let this kid in. He's clearly one of us. Stop freaking out. Being ridiculous. And then we meet... Did we ever get the girl's name?
I don't know that we got her name.
I watched multiple times, and I don't think a name was ever said. So we have Very Pretty Girl and Thor and Dizzy kind of making out in the bed. They're definitely on some stuff. It doesn't seem like Dizzy's taking anything yet as of this point. And they're going to go downstairs and dance and have a good time and whatnot. And we enter a land of balloons and light shows. And
voguing.
Voguing.
Drag queens.
People
performance.
Being free.
It was amazing. And lots of drugs.
Yeah.
Lots of
drugs. And I learned something because while I'm up on voguing, did not know voguing was going on back in the 70s.
I didn't either. In the underground houses. And it's such a... like a strong community. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know if you guys have ever voguing happens kind of like sororities and fraternities where there's different houses and house mothers and they teach you and they make sure you get to your practices and your like performances and everything. So it's like a really beautiful community, and I'm glad that they showed it and paid homage to like the role it really played in disco. So we know Bakusa is there. Mylene already asked Bakusa to play her album, but Dizzy brings it to give to Thor. He's like, this reminded me of you. It's my sister's album. I want you to hear it. He's like, oh, I'm giving to my man Bakusa, who maybe Thor has been having
some
like things
relationship with.
Yeah. So, because listens to it, he likes it, he plays it, it goes like gangbusters. It spreads like wildfire.
Everybody's just like, oh, this track is life.
That's why I love that song, because it transcends over so many different things. Like, this club, everyone could relate to it. The people in the church earlier, everybody could relate to it in a different way. Like, it just, it's a universal song. And
I
feel like
the interpretations can be, it can be taken in so many different ways. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Because, like, you know, like, I can feel you inside me, she's talking about God. But some people might not be talking about that when they're...
Out of the Bronx too, like,
those words were written about God. The way she sings them,
it's not quite.
I think she's thinking about Zeke.
But he gets at her free.
Can we just pause? Can we give it up for Dizzy?
You did it, Dizzy. Yeah.
Dizzy was the plug. He did it by giving that record to Pacusa to play. Because that's what
it's what nailed it.
Exactly.
There was also a quote later. It was hits don't become hits unless fairies wave their wands in unison, which I thought was really funny.
It was cute because it's also still true. Right, exactly. I do want to talk about one more thing that happened in the scene, and that is the build-up to this kiss, which I watched so many times this episode, and they only touch their lips for, like, maybe half a second. Mm-hmm. But that entire build-up of, like, tongues and kissing and boobs and nipple and, like, all... I just thought it was a really great representation of, like, E in a club as far as, like... feeling everybody, and then, like, this giant build-up to, like, the you get that it was happening kill. Longer. Yes, exactly.
The superhero.
I liked these series of shots, and that it wasn't just showing, it wasn't just, oh, kiss, and great, they did it. It was a whole experience, and I thought that it was shot very well.
So then, and when I saw that, the first thing, because I remember hearing about it before I watched the episode, me too. It was like, oh, did you see when Dizzy did blah, blah, blah.
I was
blah,
so
blah.
Mad when I heard that.
So,
I was
like, right, no. I'm like, whoa. So, question was, do you think it was, is there going to be more from this kiss, or was it just a one-time thing because everybody's tripping, they, you know,
stepping into the friends of the shoes of the friend, whose name we don't know. The way she was pushing it made me think that Thor was like, I have a crush on this guy. I don't know if he's gay or not. And he's kind of like hanging out. And she was like, you guys should kiss. It's okay. You could kiss him. She was really rooting for this relationship. And it made me feel like that maybe they had had a conversation before. And she was like, I can tell you guys like each other. Just do it. Just kiss. I'm here for you. That was my take on it.
Okay.
I agree with that. I can see that.
But is Dizzy going to be down with it? Or is it just a one-time thing?
I'll be interested to see because... was it 2 or 3 episodes ago, one of his brothers used the word fag, and everyone was like, yes, that would be a terrible thing to be. He lives in the Bronx. Not a great place to be gay. And his father is, though fun and really cool, like, I'm not sure if he's the kind of dad that would be cool with having a queer son in the 70s. So, I'm sure that we'll explore this topic more. I don't know how... I don't think it's going to be an easy... if Dizzy decides to come out or live this lifestyle, I don't know if it's going to be an easy transition.
I'm also really curious how the Get Down Brothers are going to handle it as well. I think it's going to be an interesting conversation. I'm really excited to see... I do think we're going to dive into it. I don't think Xiao's... yeah, he's not going to... but we'll see.
But see, at the same time, I kind of don't know if I even really think that he's going to go... If that's the direction he's going to go down, like, I kind of feel like it might have just been one of those one-off things.
It could definitely be. It might just be a thing with Thor, because it's clear he's not, like, it's not like he's crushing on, like, a lot of dudes or even one other dude.
Right.
You know, he clearly didn't have a problem hanging out with a girl. Like, and that is, your sexual identity and orientation can be kind of confusing, so it could be. It could be any number of things. I'm glad that we touched on this subject now, and I hope that we explore it further. Queers in music. Okay. So, next scene, Roy Ashton calls from America Star, calls up Cruz, and is like, hey, pretty wild about that Mylene girl. How's it hanging? We're going to send a limo to come pick you up. Jackie then gets a call and freaks out because, as we know, Roy and Jackie do not have a good relationship.
Not only that, but then he almost blows up his own spot. I was like, Jackie, if you don't shut your face.
Oh, I know. Oh, my goodness.
He just came in don't trust him. I'm going to pay you back. And I'm like, Jackie, just chill, calm down, bro.
Give it a second.
Just walk in and see what's going on. Feel the vibe first.
Right, maybe find out what's that. Oh, you're eating
Man.
Cake. Like, that's very late recognition. I like that Roy was able to, and very talentedly, played off as kind of like, we're joking. It's hilarious, right? You're a genius. And then they were able to move kind of forward. Mylene obviously caught on immediately. And she was like, what are you doing? You're ruining it for me. So they sit down and basically, like, yes, we want to sign you. And Cruz is doing the right thing. He's like, let me challenge every position. Like, you're not going to take Teddy Pendergrass' call? What's going to happen when I call?
Right.
Which I was like, yes, you're thinking. And then he stands up to say, you know, we need to shop around, but we had a good meeting. And then I love Mylene, but when she stood up and was like, no, I want to be here, I'm like, you never take the first deal. They want you. They'll wait. You have a number, like, if not a number one, you have a hit record. Mm-hmm. Like, you have all of the power.
Right.
By signing away everything right here. If you get a deal, y'all, never the first one. Make them work for it.
Ask
for
50% increase. It's just like when you go looking for houses or cars.
Or don't literally go for anything. The first
deal.
Ever.
Go shop around. Even if you go back, at least shop around first.
Poor Mylene. She's just not cut out for this business.
It just showed how young she is and how naive. And she's like, she's just so excited.
She is just like, I want this deal. Let's make it happen.
Her eyes
now.
On the prize as opposed to getting there.
Exactly. And Cruz loves his daughter so much that he's like, you know what? We're just going to do it. Like, if that's what she wants. And there was a moment that she was like, you know, I trust you to protect me, and I trust Jackie to guide me. And Jackie's face really concerns me, because it's clear he doesn't believe he can do it.
Right.
I think he still doubts himself. I think as the episodes go further along, when we get to the next part of the season, I think that confidence will start to come back. But I think it's still a little bit shaky.
I mean, considering the day he had yesterday, we could probably cut him some slack. Man. Like,
and then all the calls and his ego just getting... Yeah. His ego took a real big hit.
Definitely. Definitely. I'm trying to think of what... Oh, there's one question I wanted to ask you. Do you guys think that Mylene got the enjoys snow activity, or what did he say? Winter sports?
Oh, no. She didn't catch that.
Really? In her face, I thought she was like, I know what cocaine is. Like, I listened to disco.
I don't know. I don't know. The way he... I don't know. I don't think she picked up on it.
No, okay. I was wondering. I wasn't 100% sure, so that's why I was asking. I kind of hoped that you would know, but maybe not.
Now, I wanted to say, too, we've heard stories about Roy, and then we already know that, you know, like, I kind of felt like them agreeing to this deal was like a deal with the devil, but at the same time, Cisco ain't no chump. And Cisco has been referred to as Diablo by some people as well.
And we know he said
they might be equally yoked.
They have that exchange. He's like, oh, I know, I looked you up. He's like, so we understand one another. And he's like, yeah, of course. But I don't put it past Roy to be a sleazy MF.
For sure.
And especially because he's like, oh, we'll make a contract. Like, and again, Cisco does the thing where he doesn't get things in ink. Like, he's like, what about this contract your lawyer sent? Oh, he's fired. We're ripping it up. We'll make one that's amicable for everybody. Now, because I could get my lawyer in here and we could discuss deals. Like, lawyers are going to be necessary before we sign anything. Like, and he was just like, yeah, that sounds good. And I was like, no, go back. There's so much work left to do. Very concerned about whom they're putting Mylene's career, like, whose hands Mylene's career is in now.
I think it goes back to him as a character, because he's a man of his word. And I think that he just trusts everyone else to be a man of his word, too.
And if you're not, it's going to be trouble.
I look forward to Diablo coming out, because is her name Lena? The mom. Oh my goodness. Oh.
We'll just call her mom.
Okay, you guys know Mylene's mother, sorry. She clearly has kind of softened him, like they've come to an understanding between one another, and at the end, we could skip a little bit ahead because we're almost done with Cruz. It's clear she comes to him, and he's like, oh no, we can't. She's like, it would be okay if we did, though. I don't know what's going on there. She looked a little messed up. Like, maybe she had been beat up or roughed up, too. Her hair was kind of wild, and she looked like she had a bloody nose. So I'm not sure if other crews kind of beat on her or not. I was very confused by this very short scene that they kind of stuck in at the end.
It was not long enough for me. I did want to know a little bit more about that. But, yeah, I'm pretty sure they're about to get busy.
Yeah, definitely. So they've hooked up back again, and he's got, you know, his daughter, and he's managing her career. So he feels good now. I have a feeling we're going to see Diablo come out, and that... Mylene's mom is probably not going to be very happy about that. She's clearly leaving this religious life, and she's seeing all the good in him, but I have a feeling the bad is going to rear his ugly head soon. Okay, so let's move into this last part, which I call Two Roads Merged. Zeke has decided to show up. He's going to do the support for Koch. Koch. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Koch.
Something like that. So, he's sitting on the platform, and Koch is late, which is very, very, very annoying, because he's got to be at this battle. And eventually he shows up. The guys kind of are freaking out back there, but what can they do? They've got to perform. When so first Cruz gives a really good speech where I'm like, why aren't you running for mayor? Right. Like, his speech was so, like, I was inspired. Like, we will build houses and we will change the world. Like, we could do it together. And for him to be the lead-in to Katja come up and then just sound so silly. Like, just like a complete dud up there. Like, he didn't sound like professional. Well, not only that,
but he definitely, I don't feel like he really understands the working class that he's trying to represent.
No.
Like, at all.
Because Do you feel safe in your neighborhoods? Mother, I swear to God. Like, I like the spray painters in the bag being like, you stay here and find out.
Right,
like,
that just was great.
So he sounds ridiculous and crazy. And
yeah, talking about putting the graffiti, you know, the taggers.
Mandatory like, 3-day sentences.
Problem. The problem is the graffiti. No, he just doesn't get it.
No, clearly. Yeah, putting out fires or anything. Like, just wanted to ask people if they felt safe in their neighborhood, not what he could do to help make their neighborhood safer. Mm-hmm. Again, just putting the blame on people who live there instead of talking about solutions he might bring to the neighborhood. So I was done with him pretty quick, and I was surprised. The audience was just barely hanging on. But then our boy gets up there.
Man, that made me proud.
Zeke has to have this, like, come to Jesus moment of, I've been told that I need to pick. By both sides, essentially. Mm-hmm. I've been told that I can't do both. I've been told that, you know, if I don't pick one, I'll lose both. It's been really rough. And then he sees this train go by. Raise your words, not your voices. And he has this epiphany that he could do both because he's special. We know Zeke is special. And he starts doing these references to different taggers that no one else in the audience can get. And the swell of support from them in the background just being like, yes, and the adults being like,
what? Well, what's going on?
Well, they're he's reaching the youth. They're excited. Like, it's so funny for them to be like, oh, he speaks their language. We've got them on board. And
bam.
It's just hilarious. And I love the way he does it. It's so poetic.
Oh, it was
and
so
quick.
Eloquent. It was beautiful.
And it sounded like community. He was like, but then I talked over there on 163rd, and he's mentioning all that. And then we get to see their tags, which is cool, which I'm 97% positive are actual tag, like old tags from New York from actual graffiti artists, which is really, really cool to see. And he inspires them, and he puts it at the end, he brings up his mother again, and, you know, the children are not the problem, the youth are not the problem, or the solution, which I got a little misty eyed, hey, guys.
Man. It was great.
It was so beautiful.
Children are the future.
It was just so touching to see that he actually believed, like, for the first time, I think he believed that himself, that he did have the power to change, and he was seeing it and affecting it, and we know that he lights up when he performs. Every time he's performed, it's boosted his confidence and helped him do more. So I liked that he was able to do it in a crowd that wasn't designed for that, necessarily. So I thought that was a really good scene. It hit me in a lot of different ways.
I'm excited to see where that goes, because I think Zeke's slowly going to get his own following.
Yes.
Through this whole thing, I think he's going all of a sudden going to get his own community, and they trust him, so they're probably support Koch. But I'm just excited to see all these people that he gets on board.
Yes. Yes. Okay. So then the girls come up, they sing the national anthem. It's gorgeous, as always. And then we get to Kelly's favorite part.
I'm ready. I'm looking at my notes. Woo!
We have the DJ battle.
Pass me the ball, coach.
Get in there. Do it.
Battle Royale. Woo! Let's talk about the fact that these dudes opened up with the Star Wars theme. Now,
son, what I told you, like Star Wars,
but I'm not a diehard fan.
Right here.
So I don't always get hype or get goosebumps when I hear the theme song. I'm just like, oh, Star Wars. Oh, okay, cool. The way they use that, wow.
Sir, wait, wow. Let me pause it here. I am a huge Star Wars fan, so when I hear that sound, and then I see, like, the Falcon and then the big shots, and I'm like, yes! And then I rep Black Nerds, so, like, I work for Black Girl Nerds, but then also, like, I just am a Black Nerd, so weird Black Nerds really just, yes! And so to see kids in the 70s, but this is before the second Star Wars come out, so it's before it really hits its apex, where it's the huge thing that it's going to become. So to hear them and just be proud and let that be their entrance and the fact that it stops everybody.
That low-key would have made me. If I'd have been the opposing team, oh, I'm done. I'm done.
It was amazing.
I'm wrapping up my mic cable. I'm done. It's a wrap. I'm going home. There's no need. Just off that, it's about to be trouble.
And let's talk about the fact that Notorious III's gimmick is like, bass.
We gotta be louder.
Like, we'll just turn our bass. Like, and not even playing any music. Just do you hear the bass rattle? guys, this is not music, but good try. You've clearly been able to blast your competition out of the park before.
Murdered the Notorious Three. It and was then not they even buried there. The coffin. I mean, just what the flow, like the way that they were just working in unison and just bam, just one after the other after the other, and then we get booed with the song breakdown.
Oh, that was great.
Like, what?
Cop and Bean style. I loved every second of it.
And then when you got, I mean, let's give it up for Shao, because Shao is legitimately a DJ now.
He was on it.
He went so hard when he thought he was going to miss that beat, and so he just leans into the record and is like, yeah. I just built this way up, and I was like, damn, son!
He was digging.
I watched multiple times, but that particular scene, I would just rewind and go back from the start.
Yeah.
Because from the moment they put on their jackets and become a team again, like when they're all dedicated to this moment, to being here and making this great, it's just amazing. Like, let's just talk really briefly about a couple of things that happened in between this scene. Shao sends his guys out to start selling. It goes well. Mm-hmm. Very well. They make a lot of money. As we mentioned already, Cadillac is watching this. He's seeing the money turn hands. He's seeing that this is creating a scene. He owns a club. I'm sure we'll see him taking advantage of this soon in the future. We also get a great moment from Mylene, rewind just a little bit. Yeah. First of all, we get a moment of respect from Mylene.
Yes. Mylene,
right before she goes on to perform the national anthem with the girls, tells Zeke to go. Like, don't stay here for me. You have things to do. You need to go now. And I was like, yes, Mylene.
It's a great
yes.
Support your man, girl.
Right?
Support your man, girl.
She's been so checking him, and I'm so glad to see, because a lot of times in poor writing, we see women just nag straight through. Doesn't matter what the guy's doing. But Mylene had a goal for him. She's like, I know you can be better, and I'm not going to date you if you're not going to be better. I don't have time for losers. And she was like, oh, damn, Zeke's sexy up there. Oh,
right? Yeah. Biting the lip, and then she had the lip bite, that's my boo
she's
thing.
She's like, I did that. That was me. I helped him get there. I helped inspire him. It's here. It's happening for both of us.
She was so turned on by his swag, and his swag was on.
It was on.
It was awesome.
Zeke was in his element all day.
He was on point. It was amazing. So, and then, of course, Notorious 3 couldn't even... They tried to come in, and it was like... We got the new hottest disco record.
It was weak. And then what I had to do was like, man, this is the nastiest shit I heard since Apache. I was like, what? They buried the coffin when they finally threw one and set me free.
Yeah.
I was literally
the
like...
The crowd was like, what?
Drop the coffin. You're done.
And then, of course, we see the Godfather on the roof give the one thing Shao's been waiting for, which is the nod of respect.
Yeah.
Just the, you did that.
You're doing
you did
it.
You did it, son.
You got it.
You did
and
that.
He looks so, like, kudos to this actor. I'm so sorry I can't remember his name right now. But he just, I really feel like embodies Grandmaster Flash. Mm-hmm. And I love, like, it just felt perfect. This moment of respect and of, like, and then the walk away of, like, you don't even need me anymore. Like, you're done. Like, you found your crew. You have
you
found
your
wings.
Yeah.
Yes. You're soaring. It's wonderful.
Yeah, buddy.
You took out the most notorious crew in this area, and now it's yours. You own this flag now, which I'm so excited to come back to see what they're going to do with that. So let's talk about a couple things that happen at the end. One, we see the girls in the salon where they had been practicing in episode 2, hearing their own song and getting really excited. And I love that moment. Mm-hmm. It's the same shot, the pull out from the jukebox or the radio to the girls. And they're kind of doing a dance, but then they collapse into hugging each other. And it was so, I was just like, yes, you did it, girls. I know this ends in tragedy because older Zeke has already told us. But I'm really happy for you guys in this moment. Koch wins by landslide. It's no contest. Let's see. Lydia, that's her name. Lydia, Mylene's mom, and Cruz have their moment of being together. We get to see Set Me Free be the beat of the city, which I thought was really cool. And finally, we have Mylene and Zeke on the roof talking about their futures and whether they can hold these two roads together. I felt really bad for the kids in this moment because it's youthful ambition, the kind where you're like, oh no, we can do anything if we just work hard enough. Before you understand that when you put your work into something, it automatically has to detract from something else because you're dividing your attention. And he's like, I'll be in Manhattan with you, but the Bronx is better. But you could also stay connected to your family while living in Manhattan, being a disco star and somehow still maintain the religious, like, aspirations your father wants you to have. Like, you want too many different things, and it's not going to happen. How did that scene hit you guys?
Okay, Yeah, I definitely felt like there was the whole, you know, hey, I want to keep my foot in the Bronx, but I also want to keep, you know, my other foot in Manhattan, because, you know, I want to keep pursuing my dreams, but I want to balance. Mm. And she wants, and that was her big deal. And I like the way Zeke kind of brought it back and said, you know what, we don't really need to go to Manhattan. We can do it from here, and we can just watch them and let them watch us, you know. So I'll be curious to see how this juggling act is going to work. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I'm very optimistic. So I feel like even in my own life, and, you know, I feel like it is a balance and you can do it. It's hard, but you can do it, you know, in terms of, you know, them trying to find their success in what they want to do and, you know, manage the day to day and the family and the, you know, and all that stuff. So I feel like they can do it because I'm optimistic, because that's what I'm trying to do. But we'll see, because we know there's a lot of stuff that's going to just, you know, a whole bunch of little fires just going to pop up.
Yeah.
So
I like your optimism, but I think it's just going to be obstacle after obstacle after obstacle, and like explosion after explosion. Mm-hmm. Like for me, the way it hit me, it just made me excited to keep going, to stay on this journey with them, to see what gets in their way and what things they didn't expect, because they're only looking at the positive.
And see, and I felt it was best depicted in Zeke's letter to his mother. When he first is talking about, you know, they want me to represent the great white hope at Koch, but I know that, you know, Dizzy's only crime is painting with bright colors on rusty trains, and they want to put him away for that. And he's trying to reconcile all of this different information he's given, and ends up with, like, I just hope, like, the get down is not a revolution. I just pray God gives me absolution. I think those are the words. I think it's going to be a mad struggle. Clearly, mm-hmm. Zeke attains some kind of prosperity and success. But I think we have a long, long road ahead of us to get to that point.
Oh, we do.
And there's just so long you can walk on that line and be like, I'm over here and I'm over here. And mm-hmm. That doesn't last forever.
Yeah. Yeah. You can't live in two worlds. So that was the first half of season one of The Get Down.
And hold on, wait. Let's not forget. He said, just keep loving me and it'll be all right. So I don't know. I think they can do it. Yes, you cannot maintain a lifestyle.
See, that sounded so foreboding to me.
In two worlds, but I feel like there's a possibility she can keep her dad cool and still be successful.
I hope you're right.
I hope so. I don't see that man being cool.
Okay. Now, granted, I thought it was mad cheesy. What, you know, the whole like his for me. Seeing the older books and doing his little concert intros seems just so mad cheesy. And that seems like the wackest concert of life. Like, for me, I just feel like I would have been bored and sleepy. However, he's at a concert. It's his concert. It's his show. So, obviously, he's reached some modicum of success. So, let that be something that we reflect on and say, okay, obviously, he's going to do something. He's going to get there.
So is my lean
going to get there? Because we know Disco's not going to be around forever.
Yes. And it doesn't sound like my lean's going to be around forever. Based off those intro songs, man, it doesn't sound like it works out good for my lean. I want to be optimistic. The show has not given me a lot of reason to stay in that lane of it's going to work out. Everything just sounds like
we were talking earlier that we were
surprised that we had had like a nice ending. Mm-hmm. I really thought they were going to leave us on a cliffhanger. And while
I'm kind of glad they didn't.
See, me too. We rarely get happy endings. And I think that there's a lot of times, and especially when you're just on the cusp of success, like mm-hmm. that always feels like a good time because you're on your hustle. You've got nothing but dreams and ambition. And then all these people saying, we believe that you can do it. So it should be positive in this mm-hmm. moment. And I think if we had gone kind of negative, it would have spoiled it a little bit. Mm-hmm. There's plenty of time to get negative. We have 6 more episodes in season 1.
Really beautiful way to look at it.
I think we have a nice, this is good to be here. So let's do predictions really quick. What do you guys think is going to happen for next season? Or the next half of this season?
AfterBuzz TV predictions.
There we go. Very nice.
Boom.
I'm excited to see Mylene and her girls performing and rising on success. I think that they're going to have some conflict, as a lot of girls' groups do. And I'm excited to see that play out. And I'm also super excited to see Cisco, Lydia. And I imagine that Mylene will find out in this next little bit the truth. Ooh. As will the rest of us.
Yeah, that relationship can't stay hidden long.
Okay. I think Shaolin Fantastic and the Get Down Brothers, I think they're gonna just take over. Mm. Like, I think they're literally about to start running the Bronx, at least that scene. I also think that while we are going to kind of relish in the moment of Lydia and Cruz, Cruz, right?
Yeah.
Francisco. I feel like that's just going to get real ugly real quick. Because the brother's going to find out, and yeah,
that Miley is going to find out. That man has a temper.
Yeah, he does. That's
not gonna... And we know he's killed people and sold drugs left two kids behind.
He was a gangster back in the day.
He was.
Yeah, he didn't wake up a Christian.
I mean, we might wake up two sleeping Diablos in this, and it may not be so good. I, for one, am interested in Dizzy. He doesn't have that many episode credits, which concerns me, especially with the push to get graffiti artists, especially with... Stonewall is coming up, which is the gay riots in New York. So that's a couple of years off. That happens mid-80s, I believe. But still, it concerns me. I'm not quite sure where his trajectory is going. I think he may end up in jail. His father said earlier, like, if they catch you again, I'm just going to leave you there. So scary. I'm looking forward to seeing how Mylene and Zeke's relationship flourishes next season. Mm-hmm. I think we're going to have... especially as she starts to rise and become more successful, because I think his road's going to be longer. And now that we're introducing drugs, and we know rap's early reputation, it didn't come out good. Like, people liked it. It was big for the people it was intended for, but it was instantly thought of as something that's going to corrupt the children.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they're going to be on different paths. I think she can maybe transition into the R&B world that's coming up next, but we'll see. So yeah, those are my predictions for next season. Thank you so much for joining us here, Black Hollywood Live, for the Get Down after show. Thank you for following us on Twitter and your comments in the YouTube section. That always really helps us, and we love hearing from you guys. If you get a chance, rate us 5 stars on iTunes. Tell us what you liked about the show. And come back and see us in 2017 when we recap the second half of this season. We'll see you guys soon.
From executives Kevin Undergaro, Dario Kristen, Tiana Hobson, and the entire BHL staff, we would like to thank you for supporting Black Hollywood Live, the first online broadcast network dedicated to African-American entertainment. For questions and comments, contact us. info@blackhollywoodlive.com. Like us on Facebook, tweet us, or Instagram us at BHL Online. And I am the official voice of Black Hollywood Live, Scipio, Instagramming at KingXOBay. Thanks for tuning in. The views expressed here are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of BHL or its owners or principals.